Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lee.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and
talk about it.
We're very excited for all of you joining us right now. Just one more reminder up top, give us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Help us out.
Yeah, we keep getting these fucking people from some other Sopranos podcast that doesn't exist coming in and giving us 1-star reviews. Podcast.
Yeah, it is very strange that all of our haters are people who immediately go, this is bullshit, I'm going back to talking Sopranos, which is like, why would you?
Why would you invent some fictional podcast to name check it in a review? You know
exactly why would you name check a fictional podcast? And second of all, what kind of fucking loser do you have to be that you need more than one Sopranos podcast in your life? Now, of course, if any of our listeners do listen to multiples, well, that's fine too.
Glad to have you, girl.
Yeah, very happy to have you here. And once again, the Patreon, patreon.com/frotcast, the $8. Tier is, of course, Pod Yourself a Shout Out, which we do at the very end of the episode. All right, let's get into it. Today, our guest, who is a fantastic human being, you've heard him on the Cometown podcast, you've seen him on Comedy Central. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Stavros Halkias.
Yeah, how we doing, boys? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I think I fucked up your last name again.
No sweat. I mean, doesn't even matter.
Is it Greek?
It does.
It is Greek. I have no pride in it. It's all good. I'm named after Stavros Halkias is my grandfather. He's a piece of shit. My dad's a piece of shit. The name has no. It's mine. It'd be weird to change it, but I don't have any. I don't respect it. So every time, it's fine if you mispronounce it. No big deal.
Yeah. It's like a fuck you to your family.
That's right.
Especially the patriarchs of your family going back generations.
Exactly right. Nice. Who I believe, and the other thing is, it might not even actually be our family's name, because just doing a little digging, that was the most common name from this island that our family comes from. And we're talking 4 or 5 generations back. And the story that is told after my aunt in Greece did a little digging is that our great great grandfather was fleeing off of gambling debts and changed his name to the most common name from the island.
So that
he would not be able to be traced, you know, back in the fucking 1910s when it's you just go to a new town, new name, and nobody knows who the fuck you are.
You know, the weird thing is my great grandfather did the exact same thing. My real last name is not Mancini either. He had some, I don't know if it was a gambling debt or something with the law. But yeah,
hell yeah, dude.
With a little digging, they're like, oh yeah, that's not your real last name.
Yeah, no, he just saw Godfather 3 and was like, I want to name myself after Sonny Corleone's bastard child. That's what I want.
Yeah.
So yeah, feel free to shit on the name as much as you want.
Yeah. Well,
never.
You know, fuck everyone from that island, I guess.
Yeah.
You got to take pride in the name that your great grandfather chose to escape a gambling debt.
That is true. That is the coolest thing. He's cool, way cooler than the immediate Halkiases that I know. I'll give him that. My grandfather just fucking was like a guy who played the lottery every day and never won, which is statistically seems impossible. And he used all his money on bird, like exotic birds, in his apartment in Athens.
What?
So, yeah, yeah. We're talking. I mean, I'm telling you, man, this is not a name. If I could be rid of this legacy, I would.
What was
so? So go ahead, Matt, is what I'm saying. Call me Halkaius, whatever the fuck you want.
What was the most exotic bird or the most expensive bird that he owned?
You know, I will give him, I don't know, then I'll be honest, I was, because the last time I saw them, I was maybe like 9 or so, right? Or, you know, he was, by the time I went back when I was older, he was kind of, he had a tough time maintaining them, but they were cool birds. I mean, we're talking like little fucking, they were colorful as fuck. He would go all out. I mean, he's spending like, he's using vitamin, like he's the kind of guy that wouldn't let my grandmother like leave the lights on because it spent too much energy. He was worried about that, but he would like buy his birds like vitamins so they would like have fucking shiny ass coats. So, you know, they were cute birds. I don't know what they were. He had a couple parrots, a couple, you know, we're talking tropical shit.
Sure.
Yeah, macaws and shit.
Did not belong. Yeah. Nothing that big. Smaller. No toucan. I would have loved the toucan, but
yeah,
small tropical shit is what we're talking about. And he loved them. Yeah.
So are you a Sopranos fan?
Oh yeah. Big time.
Nice. When did you first see Sopranos? Was it when it was out or did you catch it later?
No, not when it was out. When it was out, it was like, I do not come from an HBO household. And
you had money for birds, but not.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. That's where all the money went, was to the fucking bird vitamins. Mm-hmm. No HBO. We had Greek satellite TV, but no HBO. Me and my mom had like mafia movies were like our thing, you know, like my mom is like, she's a very straight, you know, my mom's a great lady, but it's like some of the shit she loves will just catch, you would never get. She's like a nice, cute little Eastern European woman that bakes cookies and shit. And she's the one that like introduced, she loved The Godfather, like the classics. And so we had that in common, but she was not a big, it didn't translate to like TV. So I didn't really I came to The Sopranos much later. I didn't really watch it until I think like HBO, whatever the first was, it Go or like before Max, like a couple years ago. So this is like, you know, 5 years ago maybe I saw it when I first moved to New York and I'm depressed as fuck. You guys are West Coast boys, but like that's the, like, you know, moving to New York, your first year is just so horrible. You're like, none of your dreams are going anywhere. It doesn't feel like it's going to happen. You're walking everywhere, but you're fatter somehow. You know what I mean? And it's like, so it's like that winter, I just was, I ran through all the HBO shit, you know, like I had gotten access to HBO Go or whatever, and I'm just crushing the whole, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm, whatever, Larry Sanders, and that was actually the first time I saw Sopranos, and I was like, God damn, I cannot believe it took me this long to run through it. And then I did a rewatch. It saved me, like, at a point in quarantine where it was like, you know, right, like April, like maybe not, maybe like May, right before I got like kind of nut. It was like when you're just like, I've been here for 2 months, you're scared for your life.
You're on the cusp of murdering your whole family.
Yeah, dude, exactly. Especially New York. Thank God it wasn't my family. It was just my fucking roommates, which is worse, I guess.
Are you and you're a Philly guy?
Yeah, I grew up in Baltimore.
Oh, Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Grew up in Baltimore, and so I did a rewatch in like April through May until the weather got nice and New York stopped being so scary. It was kind of like my crutch, because here March was like, oh, you're gonna die if you go outside. So it really, I mean, and then, you know, I just kind of was really, I was so close to immediately starting it over once I saw the finale in like May, but I was like, you got to go outside. You got to walk outside. Man. It's like, you can't do this. I had gained like, you know, over the first half of quarantine, it was just like watching TV and ordering like 7 seamless meals a day, you know? And it was like, I cannot watch The Sopranos. I can't do 4 episodes a day, right? Without a fucking, you know, without a break.
So. Yeah, a lot of people fresh. Say like, oh, you know, in New York, you got to eat the bagels, or you got to eat the pizza. You know, for me, like New York was about the seamless. Like you could get getting any delivery meal at any hour of the day. That was
pretty
nice.
And I live in Queens too, so it's like I live in Astoria, which is the best. like in terms of like mid-tier food, mm-hmm. like shit that comes in a plastic, like restaurants you go to with like, you know, just like plastic fucking tableware, like not real yeah. glasses and shit. It's got the best like any kind of food you want. So it was like, and you know, during the beginning, it's like you felt like a hero for ordering takeout. You're like, I'm helping these businesses survive.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean. I yeah. gotta get three appetizers for every meal. Yeah. I'm the lifeblood of this. I've gotta redistribute my podcasting wealth through Rangoons to keep the Queen's economy running.
So. My favorite delivery flex is when you order for yourself and it comes with like four sets of silverware because they think you're a family.
Absolutely. Yeah. One time I got the most suit. I ordered with a friend, Tim Dillon, a comedian Tim Dillon. Yeah. This motherfucker ordered so much sushi, they gave him like, it came in like what a sheet cake comes in. Right. Like a
party tray.
Yeah, like a party tray. And he wasn't sharing. I was in awe. I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, I have gotten three chopsticks, but I've never gotten the fucking sheet cake tray. But yeah,
that's
man.
Impressive.
It was nice to watch. It was good to see.
I had a huge stoner roommate, and the coolest thing I ever saw him do was, I was leaving the house around like 11 a.m. something or other, and he had just ordered like a big Chinese food meal, and I came back to the house after 6, and he was on the phone with the Chinese place, and he was like, hey, do you remember my order from this morning? Can I just get that again?
Oh my fucking God. Let me just, I'm sorry, I don't mean to take over your own podcast, but I just need to...
Yeah,
I just need to give him the fucking standing ovation. That the idea to go like another round,
uh-huh.
like,
I get the same thing.
To do this with a sandwich, this has been a dream of mine. But to do that with a fucking Chinese order,
it's like, hey, barkeep, keep it coming. Yeah. Same thing.
It's like when you're playing blackjack and you're like, nah, man, let it ride. Just keep
let it ride.
I have tremendous respect for that man that I've never met. Respect to him.
Yeah, that's badass. Well, so from what it sounds like, Sopranos has saved your life a couple of times.
It certainly has. No joke. I'm sorry. I know you guys did the whole intro of a podcast that doesn't exist, but mm-hmm. I'm not anymore. I'm off the sauce now.
Good.
But there was a period where I was like, where it was new and it was fresh and it was like mm-hmm. exciting. And I was on mushrooms for the first time. And it was like, I was having a bad trip and just like listening to just voices from The Sopranos. It wasn't even like I wanted to hear the podcast. It was like, I need to hear Christopher speak right now.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I started playing the fucking podcast and it literally, I did a bunch of mushrooms in my house. And then I was like, I went outside and I'm not kidding. It was the fucking, the turning point for my quarantine mental illness.
Damn.
Like a mushroom, it could have been disastrous. I was just in my room freaking out. I hear Michael Imperioli speak. I'm hitting a fucking bike ride. I took the ferry into Manhattan. Like I was just like living a fucking carefree life. I'm just walking. I'm staying 6 feet apart from everyone. I walked up and down fucking the east side of Manhattan. It was like one of the most beautiful days I ever had. And it was no joke because I listened to the voice of a character from The Sopranos. Like that's what got me out of it.
Well, that's wild.
That's
unfortunately,
the power of
that podcast doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. I was hallucinating it on mushrooms.
Absolutely. Then that's what happens when you're on mushrooms.
It's a beautiful dream, though.
But of course, there is a podcast that does exist that talks about Sopranos, and it's this very one.
And we're on it, baby.
You're on it. And before we get started, we must, of course, play the theme song. Pod. Yourself, your mom always said you'd be the chosen pod. Pod. You got to burn the shine. You're under a podcast. Blue moon in your eye. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we are talking about from season 4 of The Sopranos, episode 5, Pie Oh My, which premiered on October 13th, 2002. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Ralph buys a racehorse, but Tony ends up more attached to it than Ralphie is. Carmela starts trying to invest in her future.
Yep, that's what happened.
That's the whole episode.
All of those are the things. what was happening, Vince, while this episode was airing?
That's right. We need context for our art, so we got to know what's happening at the time that this episode was aired, and for that we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. This is this aired October 13th, 2002. A lot of things were going on. That was just after the Bali bombing. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that bombing.
That was you don't remember the Bali bombing?
Some shit.
Yeah, was it a nightclub?
Yeah, it was a nightclub in Bali. It was like the 9/11 of the Southern Hemisphere, basically.
I don't know how I missed
fucking
that.
Fucking bootleg ass 9/11. Nobody gives a fuck. Let's be honest, bro. That wasn't on CNN that long. we were fixing to get into Iraq. Probably. Yeah. No one gave a fuck about that shit going on, dude.
On that note, we got an article in the Times. Rumsfeld redraws war plans. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said today that he had ordered the military's regional commanders to rewrite all of their war plans to capitalize on precision weapons, better intelligence, and speedier deployment. That way, He said, the military could even begin combat operations on less notice and with far fewer troops than thought possible, or even wise, before the September 11th attacks. So, yeah, should have maybe listened to that impulse. The Beltway sniper still on the loose, reward.
Oh, dude, I remember that motherfucker. That was right in my backyard. We were scared.
Oh, that's right.
As fuck.
Yeah, you're in Baltimore.
I grew up in Baltimore. Yeah. That was a big one. Oh, my God. That places me right away. My dad had a white van. My dad's a contractor, and that was like that's what they told you to look out for, was a white van. He came to pick me up from basketball practice, and everyone scattered.
Yeah, he was there. And that was like the biggest. I listened to the podcast about how they caught the guy, and that was like the biggest mistake throughout the entire investigation, was that like they weren't ever driving a white cargo truck, but like someone saw it in the first attack, and that became like the thing. Even and they're everywhere. Like there's a fucking white box truck everywhere.
So Greektown was full of the sniper. If that's the case,
yes.
Every fucking dad I grew up around was a fucking contractor with a white van.
Wait a second. So it wasn't a white van.
No, he had a
Lincoln, right?
No, he had a Chevrolet Caprice Classic.
A Caprice.
Had like a little bullet, like a little gun sight hole drilled in the trunk.
Oh yeah, that's right. They like literally could go prone in the fucking
He was laying down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Shout out to them though. Fucking a watermark for black serial killers.
That's right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like we need more. There's
not
a
enough
time for representation.
Exactly.
And that was it. It was a big point of pride in Baltimore.
Yeah. Most importantly, we got a lot of Sopranos news in the news on this weekend.
Great.
That's right. So, October 13th, it's actually Indigenous Peoples Day weekend, a.k.a. Columbus Day.
In this house, Columbus was a hero.
Yeah. So we got two articles about the Sopranos, one in The Post. This is on October 13th. Sopranos off-key, say fans.
What?
Brutal. Yeah. Brutal. Damn. Fucking pun.
With last week's brouhaha over cast members of The Sopranos planning to attend tomorrow's Columbus Day parade, the line between TV and reality was once more blurred in this city, where mob opera characters have
once
been adopted.
Once more, the first time was 9/11, the second time was this.
According to the Post's internet poll, many viewers despised last week's episode, which focused on anti-Italian sentiment on the national holiday, with some fans saying whoever was responsible should be whacked.
Oh my God. Imagine the fucking Guidos of the time who decided to partake in an online poll to express their discomfort with the anti-Italian American sentiment on The Sopranos. You have to be... Oh, you got to be sweaty.
They learned computers just to vote in that poll. This is 2002. They had no idea.
They went and bought Adele specifically for it.
We always talk about, like the Scarface poster guy who's watching The Sopranos for all the wrong reasons. And this article's full of them. It's just sort of like a, almost like an anthropological study of that kind of person. One poll respondent, baffled by the relevance of episode 3 to the Mafia underworld, wrote, "The Sopranos is now about as daring and exciting as Bonanza." Another commented, "If this was the first season of The Sopranos, HBO would have no choice to pull it off the air."
It's like, I'm trying to figure out what they hated about it. Like you know, there were some people who hated that they were downplaying anti-Italian-American sentiment. Like, there's some people who didn't like that the moral of it was, like, fuck identity politics. And then there's some people who were like, Tony didn't kill nobody this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think just the fact that they entered it as a point of discussion that Christopher Columbus maybe was sort of bad. That right, even yeah. one character yeah, yeah. on the show held that opinion, even if that character was proven to be a fucking idiot, which he wasn't, right? Like, mm-hmm. the fact that, and I didn't prepare for this one, but Tony has that monologue where he's talking to Silvio about, like,
yeah.
it's because you're smart, not because you're Italian. They're yeah. probably fucking pissed, if I had to right. guess.
According yeah, to our poll, ahead, about 60% of respondents want to see more mob action in The Sopranos and say this season has become sleepy and melodramatic. 32% think the show has only been pretty good this year, while about 22% said the series was somewhat disappointing. Chief among the beef of some fans is that the show's writers have left viewers hanging over some of the best storylines from last season, such as what happened to the Russian mobster and his cronies. And a few.
I got bad news for you. You're never gonna fucking yeah. find out. And if you hate that shit, wait till you get to the fucking ending.
This is my this is my favorite part. More than 17% of poll participants want to see more of sexy Adriana, Moltisanti's girlfriend.
Oh my god, hilarious! Brutal. Well, you also have to think this is the most supercharged Guidos have ever been.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
they're
yeah.
they're just a year out of 9/11.
Yeah, that's true.
They are that's like a person of color doing terrorism in New York is like they're like that's like Superman with sunlight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the further they get from Arabs killing New Yorkers, the more their powers dissipate, but Guidos right now are supercharged, bro.
Yeah.
So when you in 2002, you got these motherfuckers fucking mad about everything.
Yeah.
So you know they're going to be acting up on when it comes to Sopranos polls.
Mad and entitled too, just like
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they fucking fuck with us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't come to this show for the fucking discourse, okay? Yeah. I come here for the mafia doing crimes.
So, of course, 2 days after this, you know, or the day after the show aired was the Columbus Day Parade, and Mayor Bloomberg wanted to march with Lorraine Bracco and Dominic Chinez, you know, from the show.
Shout out, Uncle
June. And they sued to make sure that he couldn't do that. And so there's an article about what Bloomberg was doing instead in the Times headline with Linguini like this, who needs marching?
What the fuck?
Meanwhile, in the Bronx, there was stuffed artichoke and linguini with clams and Dominic Chianese on the guitar singing Neapolitan folk music.
Lorraine really is just Junior in real life.
Time will tell if shunning a major ethnic heritage parade was a political miscalculation, but in the Belmont neighborhood yesterday, a few seemed miffed that Mr. Bloomberg decided to skip the annual Columbus Day parade on Fifth Avenue. "What do I think about the mayor?" asked Frank Boccanfuso as he ate ziti a few tables away from Mr. Bloomberg at Dominic's restaurant.
As he shoved fistfuls of gabagool down his throat.
"I think he knows good food." Mr. Boccanfuso, like many Italian-Americans from this part of the Bronx, now comes to the neighborhood just for lunch. And he was happy to see that Mr. Bloomberg chose to eat in the small restaurant rather than attend the parade, whose organizers told the mayor that he could not march with Mr. Chianese and Miss Bracco, two stars of The Sopranos.
Man.
"They should have been allowed to march," Mr. Boccanfuso, a real estate developer from Purchase, New York, said about the two actors. So he's making a statement, and maybe that's compounding the mistake.
I just like I'm imagining like journalists going up to a guy eating in a diner and going, "Hey, you're an Italian. What do you think?" And he's like, "Well, as a spokesperson for the Italian people, let me say, they should have let him march."
That's real checkered tablecloth journalism right there.
Oh, very much.
100%.
Yeah. Very much.
They got the same treatment as like Trump voters.
Oh yeah,
they got profiled left and right Italians on Columbus Day.
So yeah, that was that's. Oh wait, we got to do the songs and all that shit. The top movies in America: Red Dragon, Sweet Home Alabama, Brown Sugar, and The Transporter.
Wow, oh, okay, nice.
That's the one got me at the last one.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, I don't remember. What was Sweet Home Alabama? Who was in that?
That's Reese Witherspoon went back to Alabama.
That's right. Yes.
Fell in love with
Josh Lucas. And Red Dragon, of course. That's the Hannibal prequel.
Oh yes. Damn, what a fucking weird time for culture, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Like those are the fucking move. Like Transporter, of course, salute. But damn, that's a weird lineup.
No idea what Brown Sugar is.
I think it's Taye Diggs, but I'm not going to look it up.
It sounds right.
The top pop song was A Moment Like This by Kelly Clarkson.
Fuck yes,
oh, yeah,
dude.
She's talking about 9/11.
And the top rock song was Never Again by Nickelback.
Oh, yeah, that's their Holocaust song, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And that's been the Remember When machine.
All right. Well, very nice. Now let's get into the episode. Vince said, this is the episode in which Ralph buys a racehorse and Tony, you know, decides to take a piece of it because that's what he does. And Carmela wants to start investing. A very boring synopsis, which is why I am going to present the Bada B stories in the form of a song.
A horse is a horse, of course. The mafia swarms the club crazy horse. Tony, of course, steals Ralphie's horse, whose name is Pie, oh my. Janice enforces Junior's course, reminds Bobby he used to be a workhorse. Bobby extorts the union vote in episode Pie, oh my. Carmela wants to sign a trust, of course. Tony is like, what if we divorce? The maid is forced to own the horse, who's sick and made to die. Adriana becomes an FBI source. She snitches until her voice is hoarse. She feels remorse, shoots up some horse, and now she's high, oh my.
Very nicely done.
Very
it's
nice.
Embarrassing.
Very
every
nice.
Time.
No, you did
and
great
every
time
that time. I do it anyways.
I like that you pre-recorded
but yeah, that
this
covers
one.
It. This is the episode in which you know, it's very this is a horse themed episode.
Yeah, we know
a
we
lot
open
of horse stuff.
We open at the crazy horse nightclub, in fact. Mm-hmm. Adriana's club, and you know, she does what everybody always says is a great idea, which is to open a nightclub with the mafia.
And yeah.
Never gone bad.
No, that always goes good. Yeah,
and she's
especially and not just that, but like manage it, you know,
yeah,
be the
yeah.
owner,
be intimately involved with it.
Uh-huh.
She's got high hopes. She's like, this is gonna be my ticket to music exec stardom.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, she's getting her start. Running a bar with the mafia, but she's only using it to get a foothold in the incredibly secure business of rock band management in the
in
early 2000s.
Yeah.
Or the mid 2000s. Like, what the fuck? So she's got a plan, Vince.
Yeah. My favorite thing about Adriana is that it's basically canon that she has terrible taste in music by this
point.
Oh,
yeah.
And so, like, I wonder when they ask the band to be in this episode, if they realize, like, oh, yeah, we're like a band that Adriana likes, and thus we are basically a joke by
you
the
suck.
Show.
I wonder if it's an actual band with their real. I don't even remember what they were playing.
A few of them are actual bands. This
they're
band
called No
is,
Soap Radio.
Yeah,
No Soap Radio. Mean they had like a local Jersey band or some shit playing?
Yeah.
And they're like real bands that like are, you know, like signed and whatnot. And yeah, it must suck to be like, hey, you've been chosen to be the fucking, you know,
the
shitty
band Adriana believes in.
So this was. There's no Wikipedia page for No Soap Radio, but they do show up in the page for a band called The Crash Moderns. Before The Crash Moderns, frontman Danny Rozelle was in the band No Soap Radio. He is also an occasional fill-in member of the band Dramarama.
Nice.
Some of the influences cited by the band include The Beatles, The Cars, The Descendants, Weezer, Jimmy Eat World, Elvis Costello, Motion City soundtrack, and Cheap Trick.
Wow, Motion City soundtrack sneaking into that lineup at the end. It's, I guess every time I think like it's stupid to devote your life to stand-up comedy, which I've done, I'm like, oh, I could have been in like a shitty rock band in the 2000s, like going, like thinking that was gonna work.
Yeah, but here's like, the thing: that shitty rock band got laid after every shitty show, and
that's true.
As a comedian, I don't know, never really.
I even when I wasn't popping, when I didn't have my own fans, I got surprised more pussy than I deserved. I will say that. I will put it that way. It wasn't. It was. I had a very sexual, like, when I opened for people, my big closer was about eating pussy. I mean, the whole, it was engineered
to
like get pussy, you know what I mean? And it's like, and if you struck just if right after the show, while the magic, you were famous for about 40 minutes, it was like Cinderella,
right?
Mm-hmm. It's like an hour after, it's like the shit turns into a pumpkin and no one gives a fuck who you are. But if there's a girl who's drunk and for some reason thinks you're fake, doesn't understand how comedy works and thinks you're also famous because you opened for a famous guy.
Oh yeah,
you could get head in the at the W in Boston real quick,
Yeah,
and then soon, and while her friend was knocking on the door asking, "Where are you going?"
You're like, "Shut up! She's under my spell. Only have until the strike of midnight.
The time's running out."
but yeah, it's interesting because she's, you know, like she is getting into like the business of you know, like owning a club and booking bands as a way to get into the music industry, which is also the course that I feel like a lot of like independent comedy club owners have done, where, you know, they start the club just to like hang out with the boys, which is
totally.
I wonder if music managers are as predatory as like people who are aspiring comedy.
Of course, 100%.
I feel like aspiring comedy producers are probably like the worst group of people that I've been lucky enough to be in contact with.
Any type of aspiring manager of anything.
Yeah, anyone who aspires to middle management. Basically, when you aspire to like just leech off of other people's talent, you're probably a piece of shit.
It's the way only good managers, it's like the way, like cops shouldn't, if you want to be a cop, you shouldn't allow to be a cop. Like it should be the kind of thing where you have to lose a lottery and it's like, fuck, I got to be a cop for 10 years. That's the only good managers are people that were like involved in some shit and realized they had like, they had a talent for like getting to know people, you know, just were that, like people that sort of are like, oh, I guess I never thought about it, but I'm kind of good at this. That's the only time anyone has been good. Somebody who's like 19 and is like, I really want to get into taking 10% of somebody else's work.
I really like your theory there, like your fix for that. I think that is how, that's how cops should work. That's how politicians should work. Mm-hmm. That's how like Little League coaches and like Boy Scout leaders.
Yes,
like 100%. Anybody who raises his hand is like, no, we want the guy who's grumbling the most about having to do it.
Also, men in porn, that's how it should work too. Because it's like, there's a few dudes in porn and they have a lock on it and it's super unfair. And it's less embarrassing if the government forces you to do the porn. You know, it's like, I have no choice.
I'm doing my part for everyone to beat off.
Exactly.
I know my dick's not big. I know we have to pause 4 times during penetration for her to suck me off just so I can get a little something going. And I'm not happy about it either. But it's what it was, either this or serve in Afghanistan. And this is what I chose instead.
I'm doing this.
It was either this or
country.
The Peace Corps.
So this episode, you know, Adriana, we can start with her storyline a bit, but let's just do like some general thoughts on the episode as a whole. My general thing is, this is like an episode, speaking of like managers taking 10%, like this is kind of, you see everyone kind of getting their like parasite on, like you've got Tony, like Tony decides to claim a piece of Pyomai. You've got Carm wants to claim her piece of Tony's money. You got Janice wants to claim Bobby and like also claim Carmella's lasagna.
Just I just she's the MVP of this episode to me.
Absolutely.
Oh, 1,000%. This is one of the best Janis performances. And going into the episode, it's like when we were just emailing about it, we were talking off before we start recording where it's like, I kind of just assumed this was the one where like what happens next is like, I thought this was the thrilling conclusion of the Paiomai saga where it's a lot more violent, but this was a lot of setting shit up. And to me, what stood out was just how fucking beautiful Janis. Like, she's amazing. Her at her most sociopathic.
Yeah.
Even more, she is more evil here than when she murdered Richie Aprile. It's not even close.
Yeah, no, she stole justified.
Svetlana's leg and shit
This is so, she's in fucking rare form here.
Because
she was so good.
This is almost motiveless. Like, her whole motive is that she found out that Bobby, like, genuinely loved his wife and she was like, I want to possess this man. And her way to do that is to, like, is doing the classic sociopath thing where you just mimic what normal humans do. And,
and still cut corners, because that's the thing. She's still cutting corners on normal human shit. For example, she decides to claim Carmela's lasagna as her own.
Awesome.
And then in order to like try to get Junior to see, you know, that Bobby is still a good worker, she takes JoJo's whatever she
chicken
brought
marsala.
Over.
Chicken marsala.
Yeah, and decides to claim only, that as hers.
Not only that, but verbatim says the exact same direction as JoJo says to Bobby, but to fucking Junior and Murph. She's like, you have egg noodle. Like, verbatim, line for line, just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So, my question there, I feel like I missed the part. They didn't show the part where Janis actually like got the lasagna.
The lasagna.
We saw Carmela making some sauce that Tony tastes. And then Junior susses it out because it's like the telltale sweet sausage that he knows.
Sweet sausage and the basil under the cheese or whatever.
Which I have to say, like, at first I was like a little like, oh, this. At first I was like impressed by Junior, but then I was thinking back to my Greek childhood and I'm like, I could tell you every single one of my aunt's pastizio and used what noodles. Like, Junior was on it and you don't see it, but it's clearly like, she's running a fucking fucking lasagna Ponzi scheme, where she's just like taking shit from everyone and just pretending she can cook.
Ponzi was an Italian immigrant, so I have to imagine that he was running lasagna and ziti before he ever got into it.
So, can I just say, as a Jew, I'm so glad that Ponzi existed. You know that that would be named like a Goldberg scheme.
Crazy. You know what? I never even thought of that. That's one of the biggest upsets in history.
Yeah.
The Ponzi scheme is not named for a Jew. Yeah. That's like one of the big feathers in the Italian cap to take that from Jews.
We got him. And by the way, like, if you're looking to make like Carmela's lasagna at home, and I have to imagine many people have tried, I would suggest, the basil layer that she's famous for? You got to chop the basil first, because if you just put it in there as leaves, you're like trying to bite through the leaves and it makes, and you like, you take all the cheese topping off with it when you try to bite through the basil. So like that's
now, I was thinking that exact thing. I was like, it feels like that's very leafy. Like you wouldn't enjoy it as much. But,
I was thinking about that too. And I wonder, Carmela is like such a fucking like beast in the kitchen. Like that's one thing that has been, that's like a common thread where it's like, I wonder if it's almost like a flex to be able to, it's almost like decorative and it's like you'd think it'd be bad. I mean, who knows? Maybe she's blanching the leaves for a second. I put some thought into this, but you're right. Too much in the hands of an unskilled chef. Don't overleaf it because it's going to be fucking. And it might also be quality basil. Who knows?
That's just her trademark move. It's like when John Woo has like the pigeons flying around in the background know it's him. Yeah. That's like her with the basil.
It's the J.J. Abrams lens flare. So with the Janis storyline, we start out with she's straight up spying on Bobby from Livia's old house, which she now lives in.
Right.
And
her first scam, which she successfully ran. She's got the house. She beat Tony. The house is hers.
Yeah. And she's using the same binoculars, I realized, as that Livia used back when she used to like spy on the black postal workers and be like, yeah. "What are you up to?" And she's, you know, she's using it for similarly nefarious means, and so she sees Jojo, who's Mikey's widow. Yes. Mikey is the guy
Palmisi.
Yeah, and he got you know, he got like staple gunned in the chest and stuff like that, and then eventually he just gets he gets shot.
He gets whacked while Polly is trying to itch himself to death with the
right exactly.
Yeah, on a jog. Yeah,
on a jog.
He gets whacked on a jog, and he tells Jojo, I believe, to take a Mital is the last
thing he tells.
That's, calls her
Yeah. And Jojo, by the way, is looking right.
I know she's got the new hair.
She's got better hair this season, and she's clear. This is clearly some kind of like mafia rehoming, like foster bitch situation that they just like. They just like hook you up with like your wife dies. Well, look, we got plenty of widows around here. Yeah. So Bobby, we got you the hottest one.
It's also Bobby's in that moment, like you after like in the 40 minutes after the show, like he has that same like four weeks after his wife dies, he's still got like the widower glow.
He's got the widower glow. They're all
more horny for him because he's taking it so bad. They're just like, oh fuck, give him more ZD, maybe suck his dick a little bit. Like,
well, I think that's certainly an element, but that I think more than anything, it just shows like, because you Janice is definitely despicable here, right?
Oh, yeah,
but at
yeah,
the
yeah.
same time, all of these like just mafia retreads are 100%. They're doing the same shit as Janice. None of these women like love Bobby. They just see a fucking maid guy who seems like the least piece of shit. Like on the fucking thrift store mafia market is a fucking.
Yes.
It's like, you know what I mean? It's like finding a $1,000 suit at a Goodwill is Bobby. He's like, well, he's probably not gonna hit you. He's probably, you know what I mean? Like he's a good earner. Like he's pretty high up there, and it's like. You could do a lot worse than Bobby, so I think they don't even give a fuck. It doesn't matter what Bobby is up to. I think they're all just not as good as Janice.
No, Janice is a fucking pro. She has it in her blood, and they have this great interaction, which I have a clip of.
Listen, I can't stay. I just brought Bobby Jr. a couple Xbox games a friend of mine burned for him. Jojo! Hi. Wow, what are you doing here?
I made Bobby and the kids some of my chicken marsala. It's times like this, I remember when I lost Mikey. It's impossible to think about food, but like the president says, we have to keep going.
Uh-oh. You know what that sound means, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for our new segment, Who Did 9/11, in which we ask our guest, who did 9/11? So, Stav, who did 9/11?
Well, let me just say real fast what went down with Building 7. Let's just keep in mind. 9/11, I would suggest everyone check out that video of an Australian guy singing about it. but I'm going to have to say... I mean it's very clearly the Saudi royal government.
Like, sure.
I think my favorite thing that's ever happened on the internet is when they threatened Canada. Do you guys remember that? They had like they made a meme.
I vaguely remember that. What was
the Saudi official Twitter or like some kind of like it's not like a guy. It's like affiliated with the government or of some kind. They made a meme, and the caption was something like. You know, those who don't mind their business get like, you know, I don't remember what happened.
Damn.
And it was a meme of like a plane flying into, I don't know what, you know, what Canada's fucking World Trade Center is.
It's a giant maple tree.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it was, like Rocky and Bullwinkle, but it was like them, it was like a meme they made of a plane flying into a Toronto build, like some huge Toronto building. And it was just like,
oh, the CN Tower, yeah.
Maybe the CN Tower. And it was like, they were just straight up like, yeah, look, but like, ask about us. You know, this George Bush did, this Bush did 9/11 shit is cute, but let's be honest, you motherfuckers know who was really behind this shit.
People also kind of sleep on the fact that like they hacked the richest man in the world's dick pics, like because like the fucking and like the Saudi leader, the leader of their country sent Jeff Bezos a WhatsApp message, and then they used that to like hack his phone and fucking leak his pics because he didn't He like reneged on some bullshit deal with them after they chopped up one of his employees.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they reneged on the free shipping that Prime does, and then
Where are our child whores? Where are our Filipino child whores? You said we'd get Prime. Honestly, those motherfuckers are on a real win streak. I mean, until the oil runs out, those fucking guys are fucking batting 1,000, and respect to them, honestly.
Yeah, no.
And their weddings where it's just the boys. Like, they're like, all the women have to be in a separate room while the fellas dance and eat lamb together. Like that. They got it figured out, bro.
They got it made. All right. So that's who did 9/11.
It reminds me of going to, like, the Greek festival up in Novato that we'd go to. My friend lived by it, so we'd go there. And I love when they do like the traditional dances, and then like the men are wearing, it's like they're like birds, because the men have on like these brightly colored outfits, and they're doing these crazy like the jump kicks, and then the women are kind of just like standing off in the background, clapping. Sort of like toe tapping or something.
Yeah. It's a very there's different show off dances, and it's like the ones where you're really flexing, it's just the fellas.
Yeah,
it's like there's no need. There's some other ones where the girls are involved too, but the boys are really going crazy. It's pretty good. It's pretty tight stuff. Yeah.
So the Saudis did 9/11, and let's get back to Janice and JoJo. First of all, so far in this clip, what I loved was that she mentions the fact that she had a friend burn some Xbox games for them.
Yeah.
Like there's a little bit of pride in her voice there, and to be honest, I'm proud of her too, because it's not an easy feat, you know, back in the
day.
That
was hard to do. It was not as easy as fucking music, I'll tell you that much.
No.
There's a whole rigmarole you got to do.
You had to have a guy who could burn games. It was she's got the hookup, and I appreciate
And that tells that. You a little something about Janice. Like she is a good grifter. Like that's the one thing I wanted to I had this thought even before we were going to do the podcast, and this episode just really reinvigorated it with me. It's like I'm looking forward to The Many Saints in Newark, but the prequel I want is Janice.
Janice
goes to fucking India and then goes to Seattle.
I
want to
see fucking Pravati in India.
I want to see
That's my Emily in Paris.
100% Pravati in India. Yes,
I want to see the Harpo custody battle.
Harpo! Yeah. She brings up Harpo, this child she fucking abandoned in a later scene where she's trying to talk about how hard it is to be a parent. There's some fucking French guy sucking dick on the streets right now in Montreal for those fucking bagels. And it's all because she left. She just wants some sesame seed little fucking bagels, and he's blowing some guy at the Mount Royal Park. She's the best, dude.
She's using it specifically to like strong arm him into getting back to work, which is like that's peak Janice
Is she trying
pettiness.
To get into... Is she just trying to manipulate him, or is she actually trying to have, like, mafia clout through this?
I think she knows that, like, she's already decided, I'm into Bobby. Like, Bobby's going to be my next guy. But she doesn't want to date him if he's going to fucking, like, lose his status in the fucking mafia.
Right.
Like,
I think it's that it's Bob... It's not that... He's the meal ticket, right?
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, whereas like, I think you're absolutely right, Matt. Whereas like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe JoJo would just be with Bobby, because it's one of those things where it's like, she doesn't have anybody. She probably wouldn't give that much of a fuck if he wasn't like high up in the mob.
Right.
But Janice is like, no, this is my fucking, this guy is worthless. I would rather go fuck that narcoleptic again than Bobby if he's fucking bumped down. You know what I mean? If he's not a captain anymore or whatever, you know, it's like Bobby's useless to me. That's what I think. She's just like, well, am I wasting my time here? I think that's what it is. She's like, because I think if Bobby doesn't, if he doesn't do the thing for Junior, I think Janice split. I think it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she goes back to hunting. You know what I mean?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
She wants to know that, like, Bobby, who she is, you know, trying to, like, you know, stake as hers, is not going to, like, fall off and, like, not be high up in the, because her brother is fucking Tony. And at the end of the day, what she really wants is to challenge Tony for power.
Well, that's,
and
yeah.
So she's trying to, like, attach herself to somebody who's also going to reach, you know, these mm-hmm. high levels.
So she can whisper in his ear and probably get him whacked at some point.
Yes, seriously. Yeah. Just so she can cause more drama, because that's her favorite thing.
But there's so many beautiful, subtle aspects to this scene. I mean, other than like the obvious stuff with Janice, you know, stealing other people's food. Mm-hmm. Also, like throwing shade at JoJo for having her kid on Ritalin.
On Ritalin. It's like, your kid is homeless, bitch. Fucking, you abandoned your kid. You put a fucking 8-year-old in a basket in front of some fucking Catholic church in Montreal fucking 20 years ago, and you're talking about this woman who's got her kid on Ritalin?
Oh,
she's incredible, dude. She's so good.
And yeah, then, and actually, I have a clip of the rest of Janice and JoJo talking.
Anytime you want to drop Sophia and little Bobby off, don't be shy.
How is Michael Jr. doing on the Ritalin, Joe?
The way they medicate kids today, it's the answer for everything. And then they wonder why teenagers get hooked on drugs.
If a child had diabetes, you'd give him insulin.
I didn't mean it like that.
You do drugs.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Bobby, put it in a 350 oven for 20 minutes. You just want to heat it.
Yeah.
And that's what she says, by the way. That's exactly what Janice says to fucking... To
yeah, Jimmy. Right. Yeah.
Put it in the 350. But yeah, she's incredible.
Meanwhile, I love... I have a thing where I fucking despise child actors, but Bobby Jr. is such a perfect little,
he's
like, mini Guido.
Perfect.
Yeah.
He's perfect, and the contempt he has for fucking Janice.
Yeah,
but also,
both the kids do.
And, but also how quickly he's won over when the fucking... Lasagna's pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, that is what it would be like as a little fat kid. It's like, if some dumb bitch I didn't like was trying to be my mom, and then, like, she came home with, like, a good-ass some good pizza, I'd be like, all right, this is fucking... Yeah. I'll chill out for the next 2 hours because of how good this food is. Yeah.
Well, it seems like Bobby Jr. and the sister, like, they have like an unspoken pact to not fuck with, like, to not give any positive reinforcement to Janice, because mm-hmm. Janice is like in this scene trying to be like, tell them about the blimp we saw, and they're both like looking at each other, and they're just like, big fucking deal. And so I don't know, it feels like they're doing their best to make sure, like, they see through Janice's fucking grift, and they're like, don't do it, Dad.
I think that's I don't even think it's an unspoken pact. I think it's just like they are smarter than Bobby is. Like, they realize what a phony Janice is. Like, I don't think they'd be that rude to, like, let's say JoJo or somebody, because that other person would understand the boundaries a little better. They just see that Janice is overstepping their shit. That's what they don't like. I don't think they could just see what they understand it way more than Bobby, who is so depressed.
Yeah.
He's not smart to begin with, but he's really fucking down in the fucking dumps this episode.
It's like their instinctive reaction to her neediness. It's like when you meet like an old person out, you know, like at the mm-hmm. coffee shop or at the restaurant, and they try mm-hmm. they do that thing where they're like transparently trying to trap you in a conversation, and you can just feel that, like, ooh, this person really needs to talk to someone, and it's just like the most repellent thing ever.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with this. Yeah, they want out so bad. They're pissed. If they never saw Janice again for the rest of their lives, it would be the best thing that ever happened to them.
You know, she goads him into doing his job, basically.
Yeah.
And so he goes and he has to intimidate the head of a union. And I liked this scene because we get like a new perspective on Bobby that you don't usually get. We've never seen.
I agree 100%. I love that.
Yeah, we've never seen intimidating Bobby before, and it turns out like this guy who's mostly just a punching bag is actually pretty good at intimidation.
Yeah.
He's actually kind of scary, which is surprising.
You forget that he's actually like a huge guy, and
right.
He's huge, and he's also, like, has risen pretty far. Like, we learn later in the series that he hasn't killed anybody, but you can tell Bobby's fucked people up. He's probably, like, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like when you see, it's like if you ever see, you ever play, like, pickup hoops, and some guy that played D1 college is there, and he was a bench, never played, right? Never played in the actual games, and he's fucking everyone up. You're like, this guy is like as good as Jordan, and you're like, oh yeah, he looks like a fucking bitch in NCAA. He can't play against Duke or whatever, but it's like against a regular person, this guy is crushing everyone. That's what it was like seeing Bobby just like completely intimidating some guy at a bar. It's like, oh yeah, in the mafia he's a fucking loser,
right?
But this guy is going, he could fucking put fear in any regular person's heart.
No,
and the way he like threatens the guy is even clever. Like he's like, he's like, oh, you know, if that was me, I'd put a bullet in my head here, here. And you're like, oh shit, that was good.
Yeah. So much more than what you think Bobby is capable of. It's cool.
Yeah.
Ernie's got 184's vote. I think it's a mistake.
Pension's been ripped off for the last 25 years.
Hey, I'm sure you guys got grievances, but Dick Hoffman, what do you owe this guy? It's all talk. He's out of touch with reality, Dick. You think if push came to shove, I'd give a fuck about you?
I know what you're trying to do.
You look like a smart guy. I can see why your local puts their faith in you to do the right thing. I'm just saying, if it was me, I got kids that depend on me, like yourself. And to waste my votes on somebody like Dick Hoffman, I might as well put a bullet in my head. Here, here, and here.
I mean, he's threatening his kids multiple times in this scene. Like, he's like, oh, you've got that nice family van out there. And then he's just like, if it were me, I mean, I have kids who depend on me. And at first, you know, I didn't even, like, read that as threats. And then I realized, like, oh, he's mentioning this, saying, like, your kids, you know, that are going to be left without a father.
He sounds like a DNC staffer explaining why some delegate should stay with Hillary and not.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're going to, this guy Bernie, he doesn't care about you.
This scene's so good. And Shrimp is great in this episode, too. It's like he's just a little better than you think he's going to be. You know what I mean? Because it's like, at the beginning, it's like, you know, he's fine. And Bacala, at early stages, you don't think he's going to be much more. That character very easily could have just disappeared and no one.
Yeah, he's a punchline for the most part. Like, he's just like a guy you kind of expected to just kind of be a side character who really fucking comes into his own.
And this is the first time that they're like, because like, you got to think Steve Sciarippa is like, they didn't know that they were casting somebody who was good. I mean, in this episode alone, he's doing a lot of acting, like hard acting. Like he goes from like being super depressed and he plays it well. And I think it's the kind of thing where it's like, if they knew Bacala was going to end up where he ends up by the end of the series, and this is his big turning point, you kind of think like, would they cast someone who was like, you know, just a guy who's kind of getting his start and playing a lot of like big Guido roles? Or would you cast somebody
played a Guido.
More...
He was in C-Spot Run as a gangster.
He kind of, I guess it's like he sort of like rises to the occasion. And it's like, because sometimes, especially I think later on, some of the like, you know, the child actors that grow up, it's like, they're a little out of their element. Bacala does a great job. I mean,
there's so many like morbidly obese actors who would be like otherwise unemployable who really got to stretch their wings in The Sopranos.
Yeah,
like, this is my shot. Yeah. This could be the only chance I ever get.
Totally. I mean, Vito does great. I mean, his arc is crazy, and he does he fucking crushes it.
Yeah.
Very, very good acting in that.
Including in this episode where he only has to do one thing.
Oh my god.
So this is
I love it. The fat guy
breaking a chair is one of the most iconic guttural laughs in the world. I can tell you as a fat man my whole life, it's a constant fear. It's like I know I have to inspect the chairs. I have gotten where it's like the chair is fucked and anyone would have broken it.
Right.
But I happen to do it and it's so much funnier when a fat guy does it. It's not even close. It's not even close.
Yeah. And like that's the thing. I mean, after last episode, which is called The Weight, and so many fat jokes about Vito, I feel like David Chase really just loves writing fat jokes for these guys.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
He's like the fucking In Bruges guy with little people.
Yeah.
Like that dude loves making fun of dwarves, and fucking David Chase loves making fun of fat people. And there's a lot of fucking great fucking Vito fat jokes. The first one was he orders a nachos grande and a Diet Coke, which is like a classic fat guy joke. Breaking the chair. I also love that he just random aside to aid, he just goes, "You should play Skinnerd,"
which
really endeared me to him a lot.
That's just when aid.
Is Vito the guy involved in the before and way before joke? Is it him and Bacala?
That's
one of the best. Just such a good joke. another classic from Paulie.
But yeah, that's when AIDS realizing that running a mafia owned managing a mafia owned nightclub might not be the most fun thing ever. Is that they just show up, kick her out of her office, order food that they're for sure not going to pay for.
Never going to pay for.
Into her office and then break her chair and then don't tell her about it.
That's like a
classic Sopranos thing, is that my favorite thing about them is that they do this high-minded prestige drama, but they don't avoid the easy good jokes. And Adriana fucking falling out of her chair when she's trying to convince Christopher.
Oh, it's so perfect. I have a clip of that.
But why do they have to come here? I don't understand.
This place isn't bugged. The cops and the feds don't know about it. Probably in time they will. Until then. Oh, shit.
Just God. The immediate laughter. The fact that he's just like instinctively could not hold back the laugh because it's fucking funny. What?
Being annoying. He's so happy to laugh at her. He's like, shut the fuck up. And it's like, God is basically like, you're a fucking idiot. That's how Christopher sees it.
But those are the two things, like a fat dude or just a fat person falling out of a broken chair is funny. And also a really hot girl falling off a broken chair is funny.
Absolutely. And I also think it gets to the root of what the mafia is, which is just like a group of grown men who don't ever have to outgrow like being like doing like frat boy jokes. Like they're in a grown man fraternity and they can continue like giving people shitty nicknames and doing practical jokes their entire life.
It's just fratty bullshit that keeps growing exponentially, because it's like the macho bullshit turns into literal murder. And then it's like everything just gets fucking ratcheted up like 100 times. I know. Adriana, and this is honestly, of everything in the show, this part is the hardest for me to rewatch. Like this arc, the Adriana with, because to me it's like she really doesn't deserve this. I mean, a lot of people don't, and it's like it's the fucking feds. It's like as despicable as the mafia is, them targeting Adriana, who is like some dumb girl who's unfortunate enough to be born. She's the Aprils, niece. So she's unfortunate enough to be born into this. Her mom's an alcoholic. All she knows is this stupid fucking life. And some fucking murderer heroin addict is like, she's involved with him. Her life is bad enough. Now they're gonna involve her. What the fuck? You don't try and get Christopher? It's like the FBI is more despicable. Like the FBI targeting Adriana to me is like 1A, 1B, Ralphie, like killing the stripper. Like, they're doing the exact, not the exact
it's,
same
no,
thing.
No, no, but it is. It's the same type of fucking extortion and exploitation that
and
the
for
mafia
nothing.
Does.
Okay, she runs a fuck. I mean, she did fuck. I know they had to throw that in there, like the cocaine subplot where she had to, like, didn't she, like, try and cover something up later on where they really have her or something? But
yeah, but they,
it's all like, because of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's all because she's, like, on edge and they're fucking
and
everything
she
up for her.
Is stupid enough to think, like, the entire show is just Christopher being kind of shitty to her and being mean to her and talking down to her. And yet, she still thinks deep down that Christopher is going to pick her over Tony.
No, yeah. She's not a smart person, and it makes it all the more tragic that she gets caught up in this because, like, she has no idea what to do. She's being pulled in, like, multiple different directions. And
there's
it's,
no
like,
good thing. There's no good thing.
And it's super fucked up the way they treat her. Like, even, like, the, you know, the FBI agent who, like, first tricked her, who was Danielle, like, she ends her, you know, entire tenure on the show by going up to Aide and going, you know that thing we talked about with the little ones, the little creatures? Good luck with that. Like, cold
she's gonna die.
Fucking ice. you
gave her a 50-50 shot at life. Like, there's cancers that have better odds than what you're giving her. And you're like, good luck with that.
Yeah, just, good luck with that.
They're it's really despicable. It's one thing if you treat a fucking murderous mob guy like this, right?
Yeah.
Like, be mean, you know, when they're shitty to pussy, I get all this shit, I get it. But it's like, this is just an incredibly unlucky woman that you have fucking, that you are extorting the same way the mob does to other people that I just happen to have the misfortune of being in their clutches.
Yeah,
so
in their fucking
fuck
orbit.
The FBI more so than the mafia who, the FBI does no good jokes and they don't get any pussy. So in that sense, and the food is much worse. So in that sense, this show clearly shows us that the mafia is better than the FBI.
No, yeah, the FBI is will forever be the real gangster.
100%.
But yeah, so you know, so Aide's storyline, you've got her like being hassled by the FBI, you know, while she's like getting her hair done and shit, and you've got her trying to convince Chrissy to get out of the life, and like one of the things she does is like there's a scene where she's supposed to go to dinner with Chrissy, and this is one of the most relatable scenes for me in The Sopranos where she fakes sick so she can get out of dinner, and Chrissy immediately uses it as an excuse to shoot up heroin.
The second something goes even kind of bad.
Yeah,
he's I'm doing heroin now.
Yeah, yeah. And he just goes, nothing ever goes my way. And it's like, you just said about how a lot of things are really going your way, dude. Like you said, we're sitting at this fucking table, you know, do you think Paulie...
Paulie doesn't get the invite, him and his moms don't get the invite. But when he is like talking to her and he's like, she's like trying to convince him to move somewhere else. She's like, you could be hurt, you could be killed. And he's like, fucking negative shit. He's mad at her for her negative thinking where it's like, even though the FBI is making her say this, this is all very reasonable shit to say.
Yeah.
And then he talks about the bird, you know what I mean? I got that hanging over me and I don't need you too. It's just, his logic is so fucking beautiful. And he's, Imperial is so fucking good. Christopher is such a great character.
I was thinking, maybe we should try someplace else. I saw this thing on TV, a tour of this house in Santa Barbara.
You're burning the butter.
Well, let's be honest. What's our future here, Christopher? You could end up in jail or something horrible could happen.
Fucking negative shit. Stop with that.
Somebody could have it in for you. You wouldn't know.
Who?
I don't know.
What the fuck kind of shit is this? Who told you that?
Nobody.
I had that fucking bird watching me when I got made. I'm already under a, what do you call it, possum. So stop with that.
I worry about you, that's all. I love you so much.
So if you love me, stir my eggs.
True.
I mean,
awesome.
I mean, if you're going to be in the mafia, it would be hard to have someone there telling you all the things that could potentially happen.
I mean, he's made already, right? Like, this is a conversation to have before he gets made. Like, when he's made, he's made, and it's like, you know.
Well, she didn't think about the downsides until she literally got caught by the FBI.
Right. Yeah, those downsides come in, like, you know, when you're Carmella, basically. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just like, I just still, I just feel so bad for her. It's just such that's it's the it's like a character that I just like this it like rewatching these episodes like this it just rips and she's like clearly just getting destroyed by it. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets like, you know, she's like gets IBS from it and she's clearly under so much she's just shitting all the time. She's just what an end to a person who really doesn't deserve.
No, she doesn't deserve any of it, and you know it's and she's really hot, so it makes it.
She's
sad.
Unbelievable, bro. This might be the hottest person doing heroin on screen.
Yeah,
this might be the most you can beat off to a person doing heroin might be this scene in this episode. She looks incredible. She's got the red bra on. She looks.
She looks great. She looks great.
How did you feel about the realism of the heroin scenes?
In this episode, you have Adriana obviously like shooting heroin and just like being sad. And that's kind of like the cliche thing. But the great thing was finding any excuse. Cause that's what, you know, like the just nothing goes my way and just immediately being like, you know what? Time to shoot heroin after like claiming you've quit a bunch of times is just like, oh, it's so beautiful. And that continues out, like through the rest of the season. The next episode, you have, Chrissy shooting heroin and having to go to work, and it's so
but
great.
He's got the gear bag, and he's got the little spoon.
He's very organized about it.
Yeah,
he is. It's interesting too because it's like that's the kind of world that they're in. Where like, I mean, I can't imagine back when I was fucking using like having a gear bag that was just like in a drawer, you know, just be like, oh, you know, don't open that drawer. It's got all my heroin in it. You know, like I like that he was in like a relationship with someone where this is something they could share. I mean, that's actually a recipe for a long lasting relationship. So, you know, good for them.
It is sad. I mean, those two people without the mafia honestly would have been perfect for each other.
I know.
Like it's they really were. And it's like, you can tell in the later seasons, like, when Chrissy's fucking married to another, like that, he did love Adriana. Like that is it is super tragic. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the entire fucking series is where I think is it after she tells him? I don't remember when it is, but they're having a discussion about what jobs he could have, they mention like modeling, and he's like, nah, the people modeling are too fucked up. And she's just like, you're so right. Like they both agree he could be a model, but he's afraid that the gay guys in modeling would try and fuck him. And it's like, and they're just so on the same page, and she's so gorgeous, perfect. And he's just some fucking dumb Guido, and then she just loves him so much. And they just align. It's you know, it's very sad.
But let's get into Ralphie. This is the final storyline. Ralphie and Piomai, and then you know that which intersects with like Tony and Carm's thing. But for the most part, the Tony and Carm thing is just another episode where they're talking about investments, and I don't really give a shit.
Same.
It's like it's interesting in that like it's like, oh, you know, like Carmela is trying to like get some financial independence, but beyond that, I don't really care.
There's two reasons I care a little bit. It's because the first one is how funny it is when Tony tries to sneak it by her that he doesn't want to sign the one she really cares about. He signs the like two bullshit ones and he's like, all right, that'll do it, and just tries to like eat cereal, and she's like, well, she won't notice. And then he's like, I gave you 2 out of 3, which is not how that works at all.
The
so
way
that was
he answers
hilarious.
Is you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and it's like, you're not reading the room, dude. She's mad as fuck.
It's so funny how he tries to like charm his way through it. And the second reason is because we get an opportunity to get that hot piece of ass cousin Brian in the mix more. That motherfucker is a joy to look at. Are you kidding me? When he later on, when he's just like getting head at the like fucking bottom, when he's going full, he's one of the few guys that like gets corrupted by the mob in an awesome way. Doesn't really harm him. He just parties with them, and he does it for the right reasons.
Because he's not doing it to earn money. He's doing it to get pussy, and that's the only reason to be near the mafia.
Exactly.
Like, because then you'll be safe. Like, you might catch something, but it's like, I mean, that's a risk anyways, no matter what you're doing. But the fact that he's like just using his mafia connections to get his dick sucked, you're just like, you're doing it right. You're gonna win. Awesome.
But the much more interesting is Tony. I mean, the whole Piomai thing is so interesting, and to see it start up is great.
Just their predatory nature. I mean, the problem with the last episode before this was, you know, I don't think it showed Tony or any, it didn't show them in a negative enough light. And I think The Sopranos is usually super good at that. And like this episode is perfect at that.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Was that the Columbus Day episode?
No, it was the one after the Columbus. It was the wait about, it's about Johnny Sack
and the joke and like.
Oh my God, that's a great one. That's a that's a fucking classic. God damn. But yeah, this one definitely shows. This Tony really seems like a piece of shit in a way that it's like in new and interesting ways.
Too, like a multifaceted piece of shit. Because it's totally. Like in the one hand, you know, he's like clearly an animal lover and that's very much his like soft spot. So like an easy way to do this would just to have him like, oh, Tony's got like a soft side. But it's also he has like the predatory thing that he can't turn off where it's just like, you know, if you put a beaver anywhere, they're going to try and make a dam. It's like if you put Tony anywhere, he's going to try and take a chunk of a thing that's not his and to keep chiseling more and more money out of it, even when it starts like as a gift.
That when he the second time they win, right? So it's like we're introduced to them, you know, it's like the first race is all exciting and everyone's having a fun time, but the second time where they win and Tony will not put his hand away.
That is so fucking great.
It's he keeps it out the second time. He puts his hand out for the initial one, keeps it out after, and Ralphie's still smiling. And then the third, I mean, he keeps it out for a third handful. It's like,
he's straight up
extorting him.
If your fucking cousin Brian, that's got to be the most awkward thing you've ever witnessed, is a guy who's like, he's not satisfied with the gratuity that he's getting.
Right.
Like, for giving a tip that wasn't even a tip because they were going to do that anyways.
No tip whatsoever. He got completely lucky.
Yeah. And he was just like, let the horse run fast. And it's like, he thinks he deserves money from it. But it's like, he's in a perfect position. Like, this is coming from someone who doesn't own a dog, but is a dog uncle to multiple neighborhood dogs.
It's like,
he is a horse uncle. He doesn't have to clean up after it. He doesn't have to pay for it or nothing. He just gets to like reap all the rewards from it. And you can tell that like he loves animals more than he loves humans.
But it's not like regular animal. Cause like, I think of myself as like an animal lover, but that's why I have like dogs and shit. And you know, I pet people's cats or whatever.
He likes ducks and horses.
Yeah. He likes ducks and horses and the goat. The goat had like the best fucking cameo of this entire episode. Don't touch the goat. He bucks.
And then they explain that horses have like horse friends.
Yeah.
And
hi, horse friends.
a goat hanging out with a horse is fucking rules.
There's something, I mean, like different types of animals being friends. Like, there's a reason that that's like a staple of internet videos because it is always immensely entertaining. I remember going to like a goat farm to buy like cheese or something, and they just have like llamas there. And I guess like they keep a few llamas with the goats because llamas are so fucking mean that they scare away the coyotes.
Really? I didn't know that.
And so you go in there and it's just a bunch of goats, and then there's like a random llama in there that's just hanging out. It's always enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
But just Ralphie here is just like understanding how fucked he is. And you see the seeds of him realizing, I got to fucking kill this horse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he doesn't think about like, I mean, obviously it's so irrational what happens to Ralphie. You know how Tony fucking, it just flips on him. He can't calculate how much Piomai means to Tony. It doesn't make any sense. He sees the like, I got to get out of this. This is too much. I'm in too deep with Tony. Which a thing I was unclear about is like, does Tony actually like buy a part of it at all? Like,
No. He's just skimming off the top of it.
He just weasels his way into it, I think.
This is his first time. The episode ends when he like goes to comfort the horse and pay the vet. It's the first time he's ever paid money.
Yeah, I think it's just this horse. Well, because this horse is like a money making venture for Ralphie. Ralphie has to kick up to Tony because Tony is just like the head of their thing.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was the thing of like Ralph does a show of good faith to be like,
yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. It was to then, do it yeah, as a yeah, friend yeah. at first. Yeah. He was like, yeah. hey, just to show you, you know, as a sign of just, like respect and friendship.
Yeah, I was just unclear because it would have made it even funnier that he doesn't want to invest. Because it goes from the scene goes from telling Carm he doesn't have $10,000, which is like, he has 10. There's no way he can't get 10 grand.
Yeah,
but then it goes immediately to the racetrack, which to me, I'm like, did I miss him like buying $10,000 worth of a horse just to like to make it to make him even more of a piece of shit to Carmella. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But it's like he tells her he doesn't have any money. I mean, I'm sure he's gambling thousands of dollars and shit.
No, for sure. I mean, he's got the money.
My take on this was just that Ralphie is Adriana, but he knows, like, he's smart enough to know what people are trying to do. Like, he's like the worldly version of Adriana. Because, like, if Adriana was smart, as soon as the mafia started hanging out at her club, she would burn that shit down. Because it's going to cause her nothing but trouble. And so, like, Ralphie, as soon as he sees the writing on the wall that, like, Tony has muscled in on this horse, he's kind of like, well, I don't want anything. Like, if this horse dies, it would be the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because then I don't have to deal with all this bullshit anymore.
Totally. Which brings me to my favorite character in the show, other than the goat, who is great. This is
the trainer.
The trainer is great.
I love her.
But it's
who, by the way, Ralphie calls Senor for some reason.
Senor is
such a dick.
It's a female non-Hispanic, and he's like, Senor.
He calls the jockey a pygmy fuck. Like, But no, my favorite character is Ralphie's maid.
Ralphie's
maid makes a series of phone calls that happen after the horse gets sick that are just, I fucking love it so much because of number one, saying Mr. Ralph as a title just is very funny to me, but also just like listening to whoever is, I don't know if it's the same actress who was, you know, playing her in real life, who was also on the phone, but it's a couple of my favorite phone calls ever on the show. I have a clip.
Hello, I need to speak with Mr. Ralph.
It's your maid.
Because the horse is very, very sick, and he put the horse in my name, and he say I won't get in no trouble. But the horse doctor won't do nothing because Mr. Ralph don't pay the money he owes it to him, and the horse made to die, and I don't know what to do.
Hold on. Your horse is sick, and the vet won't do nothing until he gets paid.
These guys, no compassion for the fucking animals whatsoever.
The horse made to die is just brilliant.
The horse made to die.
The horse made to die. And just like, and the horse doctor, I just love the horse doctor. And so Ralphie at that point gives the maid Tony's phone number, which is like, that's
kind of a wild move too.
Yeah, ballsy as shit, because like, you know, if Tony didn't know before that Ralph was feeling some like resentment for the fact that he keeps like giving him shitty tips and keeps expecting money for the horse, like, he knows it now. And that leads to the second phone call that she makes to Tony, which I also have a clip of.
The horse is sick, and the lady, she said to go to him. Mr. Ross, housekeeper, the horse is very sick, and she said to call because they needed the
money. Slow down.
The horse is sick, the bio mine. He made to die, and the doctor, he won't do nothing until he gets the money.
Tell him I'll take care of it.
I also love.
He won't do nothing unless he gets the money. She deserved a fucking Emmy for that.
I also loved Carmella's passive aggressive blow drying in that scene where she pretends not to hear Tony say that that she should close the door, but she clearly hears every word of their conversation.
Yeah, there's also some great AJ, like what AJ's new metal phase is in.
Oh, love it.
I don't know what he's cranking, but it's horrific.
It's deicide, according to the Wikipedia page.
Deicide, hell yeah, dude. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's fucking wonderful. Just like him embodying his musical taste as he gets older, just goes right to my heart. Like,
yeah.
He was a new metal kid like me, and God bless him for that.
I missed that.
Oh, it's the best era of music,
dog.
The best era. We just broke stuff. So Tony goes over, he pays the vet, or, you know, the horse doctor. And then he sits by the horse, and the goat shows up, and he just has, like, a little moment where, you know, he's hearing Dean Martin singing a fucking horse song.
A moment of bliss, like Stav walking around the east side on mushrooms. Yeah.
Absolutely, bro. You could see Tony's having the best time he's had in, like, who knows, a year.
Yeah,
he's happier than he's ever been.
He's not near any fucking people, you know, and he's just fucking hanging out. And he's getting to do the thing that all these mafiosos, like, really want, which is to, like, play a character in a movie that they love.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And he's, like, he's fucking Dean Martin in that horse movie. And he's just, like, that song plays, which is, you know, something that he was watching on TV in the first episode of season four. So it's, like, you know, it all kind of comes back to him just, like, wanting to just, you know, my rifle, my pony, and me.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, it was.
I love that he threatens the doctor too. He's like, "You better hope she gets better."
Yeah,
because you know, he will kill that. Like,
oh, 100%.
He will absolutely fuck that guy. If it wasn't for Ralph, that doctor might be dying. You know what I mean?
Like, up. Yeah.
I mean, that's a ballsy move if you're the veterinarian, that you're gonna hold out on fixing the horse of the mafia horse. Guy until he pays you. Like, hope that works out for you, dude. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, because you got to think the lady told him, right? You got to think she was like, "Bro, this is the fucking mob's horse. Like, fucking do something."
Yeah, but then again, you know, it's not like the first time we've had like someone in the medical industry on the show think they're like
that's true.
Powerful than the mafia, or like somehow they are immune, like Dr. Kennedy was,
Dr. Kennedy,
fucking not returning Junior Soprano's phone calls and shit.
Who's so, on like, trial at the time for being the mob boss of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I never thought about that. That is fucking wild.
Yeah, that's what people in fucking who have like MDs and shit, like they're fucking ego monsters. That like they think they are immune. But yeah, that leads to my favorite moment in the show. It's not the whole scene, but it's my favorite moment, and it is when Junior when Junior's talking with Janice, and then as they're talking, he goes into his pockets and just steals his change from his jacket.
He tells Murphy he has to go upstairs. He's like, "I'll bring your jacket. I got to go upstairs and get change." And he just takes it from Murph's fucking coat.
He's just doing little grifts like while they're in mid-conversation. Like it's fucking nothing to him. Like
he can't help it.
It's second nature. Yeah. He's like, "Oh, a pocket. I wonder if there's some money for me in there." Yeah. Oh,
well, one of my favorite lines is when Bobby has decided, like, Janice tells him that Bobby didn't do that thing. Mm-hmm. He didn't go extort the guy. And Junior goes, "Each one of us is alone in this fucking universe." And it's just like the nihilism of Junior Soprano.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, "We're all alone. We're all going to fucking die." And then another great Junior moment from this episode. I didn't realize both these moments happened in the same episode, let alone this one, was the fucking the court sketch that he looks like a fucking turtle.
Yeah.
And then he just is staring down the guy. And he's stares clearly, him down. Yeah, like, he's clearly like, "Bro, make me hotter this time.
Yeah, you better make me fuckable in your next courtroom picture." No, that shit was so fucking funny. Vince, did you have a favorite or least favorite?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I did like the line where Junior says, "I'm fucking fodder for cartoonists now."
That's fucking great.
Fodder.
Yeah. He definitely never loses focus in any of the scenes that he's in, no matter what's happening this season. He just keeps reminding people he's on trial for his life. It doesn't matter that Bobby's wife just fucking died in a car accident. And he's still just like, you know, "I'm on trial for my life over here." And it's like, first of all, your life's not that much longer.
I
also liked when Tony comes back from the horse races and he's all satisfied and he's still on such a high from the horse race that he doesn't even give a shit that Carmela's being kind of a bitch. And so he just takes his giant plate of meat out of the fridge.
Yeah, a whole chicken and put in a fucking jar of salsa.
Was that what that was? Like, I thought it was cold cuts and mustard. I couldn't tell what he was eating.
I'm pretty sure it was a fucking whole chicken, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Because I had the exact same moment, Vince. I was like, "What the fuck is this cocksucker eating?"
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's what, but whatever it was, he dipped a shit ton of meat in some kind of full jar. Like, he didn't take a little bit. He just dips the meat directly in the fucking jar.
Yeah, the salsa thing makes sense because, I mean, when I initially saw it, I thought it was a big plate of cold cuts, but then if it was a chicken, the foil on top would have made sense. But in my mind, he was just dipping like giant pieces of rolled up meat into like this jar of mustard, and I was like, who the fuck has a jar of mustard that big? Yeah. Like, I don't know, but I like
but it might be though. His snacks are some of the most, that's another thing this fucking show gets right, is like a fat guy's snacks at the end of the night when it's just him. There's no putting on airs.
There's no
judgment. You, it's just you. It's a fucking big, he eats Sundays with like cereal and like whipped cream on his stomach. He's just got the whole chicken and he's dipping it direct. That's what you fucking do when it's 1 a.m. and you're alone and it's like, my roommate's not going to fucking see me. My girlfriend. It's like, this is just me. They nail a fat guy having a good ass time.
Yeah. And I would say, all in all, I'd have to give this episode a B+. Solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, if I had to think about it, just off of the top of my head, I'd say solid B+.
Stav, if you had to rate this episode on a scale of B+ to B+.
Oh, okay. All right. I see what we're doing here.
What?
I would give it a high B+, I guess. Okay. Let me put it that way. Sure. I would give it I would give it the A- of B+s. Let me put it that way.
Okay. All right.
But so it's definitely a B+, but the A- of B+s.
Yeah.
It Fair is enough. A B+, though, for sure.
I think if we average out all of our scores, that's a solid B+ of an episode.
Solid B+.
Great episode. And this has been a great episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Stavi Baby on Twitter, Stavvy Baby, and also Stavi Baby 2 on Instagram. And yeah, I got a bunch of podcasts. I do Come Town. I do a basketball podcast called Pod Don't Lie.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, hopefully I'll be out in a fucking bout. I'll be on tour. I got my second vax coming up at the end of the month.
Oh, nice.
And I'm trying to get the fuck out there. I'm trying to do some stand up, eat some pussy, and just get rolling, baby. You know what I'm saying? So, if you're a woman who watches The Sopranos and finds yourself wanting to be manhandled by a fat man with unearned self-confidence,
which is,
I got good news, baby girl. The tour is coming up soon.
You're like a, your own little DMs. You're own little. You're like a mini fucking Gandolfini right here.
Yeah. Just one of the highlights of my life was a girl on Tinder. We matched, and it was like, you know, sometimes I'll get undeserved pussy from people that like I'm very famous in like. For 2% of people, they think I'm really famous, right? Like, very specific internet people don't understand I'm not. I'm just a podcaster who has, like, a bunch of Twitter followers. But for a certain subset of people, that's real fame. This girl, we matched, and she came over, and I assumed she's like, oh, she must be some, like, online obsessed person that just wants to fuck because she, like, you know, likes podcasts. She had never heard of – she had no idea who I was. Didn't know I did comedy. And it came up in the conversation, and she was like, oh, yeah, I really like The Sopranos, but I can't watch it because Tony reminds me too much of my dad.
Oh,
and I just
shit.
Started doing some math. And I was like, oh, dude. Oh, by fucking Freud. If we're getting Freud in here. Her dad is Tony Soprano. She wants to fuck me because I remind her of Tony Soprano, who then reminds her of her dad.
Oh, man.
It was the greatest compliment I'd ever. And at the time, this was like right when we first opened up getting pussy during the quarantine. This was like May or something. And I was like fatter than I am now. My hair was literally like at Tony Soprano length. I grew my hair out. So it was like this weird little fucking half, you know, like, and I was like, oh, I just had a mustache. My pictures were just me grilling meats, shirtless, fat as shit. And I was like, hell yeah, dude, this is the best fucking compliment of my life.
That's amazing.
This girl with daddy issues, I sort of, by the transitive property, remind her of Tony Soprano.
Oh, I had the opposite experience where I dated this girl who kept saying she had a Jew fetish, but she also kept hitting me. And then when I went to her apartment, her room was filled with posters of Jerry Lewis. And I knew that, like, her fetish was for, like, pathetic Jewish men who she could humiliate. And so it was.
She's like, can you cross your eyes when you fuck me, please?
When you come, can you say, Gloria? Oh, no. Stavros, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course, boys. Thanks for having me.
Did we? Do you want me to play a voicemail? Because we give the number out, but we rarely play the voicemails that we get.
All right, let's do it. You know, this is we haven't done it in so long.
Hey, Matt and Vince, just binging my way through the podcast now, and I'm gonna have to follow along month to month like everyone else, I guess. So just catching up, I just listened to your season 3 finale, Army of One. And when you guys were speculating on why they set Jackie hideout in Bootin, when that clearly is not a project town, I think the only reason was just to hear Silvio say, he's in a housing project in fucking Bootin. And they just thought that was the best, funniest sounding town. It was just for that Silvio delivery. Anyway, that was all. Good luck with the future, guys.
All right. Well,
interesting theory.
Interesting theory.
There's got to be dumber sounding names in Jersey. There's got to be.
Yeah, right, for certain. There's got... Yeah, there's definitely dumber names. But Bootin.
It does sound stupid, I will say.
It does sound like a stupid name for a project. So, yeah, please send us more of your voicemails. First, let me just say patreon.com/frotcast. Once again, the $8 tier, this is a brand new tier, gets you a shout out. On Pod Yourself a Gun, it's the Pod Yourself a Shout Out tier. And, you know, we had some new ones last week, but this week, nobody went up to... Nobody did it.
I'm all ready to give nicknames over here.
I know. Wow. You're ready for to give you a mafia nickname. And, you know, it's it would have been great, but you didn't do it. But you still have a chance to do it. So patreon.com/frotcast. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030. There is actually another person who's just sent us like a voice clip. If you want to,
let's do it. Fuck it, dude.
Yeah. Fuck it.
All right.
Hey guys, this is David from Vienna. Yeah, I just have a little anecdote that happened to me the other day.
This is an international.
I know, from Vienna.
So I was with this Chinese whore.
In any case, I have this small Italian deli pretty close to my place in Vienna, and they have a pretty nice ham and cheese and all kinds of like nice products from Italy. And
it makes my fucking mouth water whenever Europeans talk about their goddamn produce.
Everything is so much better. And everything.
Yeah.
I mean, just with that accent, too. We had ham, we had cheese, we had chocolate. Everyone was eating chocolate.
We had an espresso, and I ate it with a chocolate cigarette.
I ate a chocolate covered espresso bean.
And so the other day, I go over there, and I was just looking at the hams they have there, and I'm pointing at one of the things, and I'm just like, oh, what's this there? And he's like, oh, yeah, this is like a capicola. And I'm just like, oh, gabagoo. And then he's just looking at me like, with like really stern face, just not really getting what's happening. So it's a bit like awkward. And I just explained to him, oh, immigrants from Italy in the States, they always speak like,
yeah. Don't explain, bro. You should never explain.
Just take the L and have a fucking sandwich.
just eat that fucking gabagoo.
Pay for the sandwich in shame and silence.
Like this old-timey Italian accent, which is like mangled and doesn't really sound like it used to be anymore. And then he's just like, oh yeah, and I was mentioning The Sopranos. He's like, oh, I never really watched that. Yeah. Anyways,
this guy just detailing him blowing it, absolutely blowing it with a social interaction. He's just like, just one by one, all the things he did wrong.
I love that he plugs The Sopranos to him, and I fucking appreciate it, dude. You got to get more people.
So there
to
is
watch
this
the
podcast,
Sopranos.
And it's very funny, and
The other thing is he saying gabagool in German? Like, where is he?
Austria. Yeah, that's a great point.
So he's speaking like. No. So he's just like, Ashifaja, gabagool. Like, doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, I mean. Listen, the point is that he sent us a very good voice memo in which he bared his soul to us, and for that we love you.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you.
We like all stories about us and The Sopranos.
We love all stories. Just send us everything. Vince, give him the Google voice number one more time so I can fucking, sync it up.
415-275-0030. We also had one email story. Is that all right?
Unbelievable.
Should I do it?
I've been trying to close out this podcast for 10 minutes.
All right, go for it. Sorry.
Fucking shit,
go
dude.
For it. No, sorry.
I'm sure it's a great email.
No, it's fine. All right. It's fine.
415-275-0030. All right, everyone. Thank you so much again for listening. I hope you had a good one, because this is a long one, but you're going to love it. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.